Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
TRE in the afternoon, presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Women Talk. With me in the studio today is Rosalind Scott-Gibb, Katie Rowlands and Jan Humpage. Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you all for coming in. If you are listening at home and you'd like to get involved, you absolutely can. Here's how.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95.
Yes, Rosalind was just saying, we don't get a lot of people commenting and calling in, do we? No, we don't. We don't. And you can and you should. And please do. Sometimes we'll get like 4 or 5 messages and a couple of calls, but sometimes absolutely nothing. So I'm sure that's just because people are too shy or think we might go, no, you're wrong, which we won't at all. We just like your opinions and we'll go, thank you for your opinion. That's nice to hear. We're talking about tea, first of all. The subject, for some reason, comes up a lot in the Daily Mail. As a very obviously popular drink for Brits, particularly. From the morning brew to an evening cuppa, tea is part of the daily routine for many Britons, so much so that we get through 60,046 cups in our lifetimes. And yet the habit will only cost us £6,622 if we drink a typical 2.1 cups a day over the average lifespan of 81 years. So we're spending £6,000 on tea if we're regular tea drinkers. Sounds like a lot to me. Are you a tea fan? Do you drink tea every day?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm an absolute addict.
Oh, really?
You know, yes. There was a point where I sort of gave up everything, you know, cigarettes, alcohol, coffee and tea. And the only thing I really, really miss more than anything surprised me. It was the tea.
How interesting.
Because it goes right back to the, you know, childhood. And my mother used to give me tea in bed in the morning.
Yeah.
And one of my most favorite things in life is to have a big cup of tea in bed in the morning.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's a real treat.
So why did you give it up?
It was a doctor that had a certain therapy and involved giving up sort of not, oh yeah, that's right, no food either for 6 days or 7 days. And nobody kept to it but me. I did keep to it.
Oh, well done.
Yeah, I was almost fainting. And I said to her, I don't think...
Is that good for you then?
Yeah, I don't think this is going to catch on.
No, absolutely. So how many cups of tea a day do you reckon?
A good... I never drink coffee at home. I have that out. But a good 6, 7, 8.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jan, how many do you have?
3, I think.
3?
I think I'm 3. But I am an addict, I think, as well.
Yeah?
It's one of... Not and like your level. Three? Not your level.
No, I think you better add double the dosage.
What's the definition of a tea addict? Do you need to have hit a minimum number?
No. Well, I think it's your withdrawal symptoms. I just felt so... I just missed it so much.
Yeah.
It was psychological more than physical.
Does anybody use a teapot anymore?
No.
No.
Do you?
I have a few. I love teapots. I really love teapots.
Do you use them, though?
No.
Or you just look at them?
No. Have you, in the cupboard.
Have you seen the tea chart on the optimal colour of cup of tea?
Oh, yes. Same with toast, don't they? They tell you what it's supposed to look like.
So the top left is a white cup of tea where you just dash the bag in and you put in a lot of milk.
Well, it depends which bag it is.
You are right. You are right, because, for example...
I like Tucker's tea, you know. I'm not Tucker's tea.
I'm drinking Yorkshire tea at the moment, and the back of the packaging says 4 to 5 minutes, which is quite a significant amount of time. I leave it in.
I leave it in. Oh, yeah, leave
but
it in.
But now I've got a problem where I've got tanning around all of my mugs because I've been leaving
this
in 4 to 5 minutes.
Yes.
And then how do you clean them?
Well, scrub them.
Actually, first of all, what I discovered, because I couldn't stand this sort of stain, now I've got my mug that also is finished well enough that it does take to soap and water and get rid of that stain.
So you need posher mugs, basically.
Okay. You have to choose carefully your mug.
I think I'm going to remove my addict status after listening to you talk about cup of teas. I'm not at your level of fashion.
Or level of mugs.
You could work on it, though.
I could do.
You don't have to quit.
Oh, dear. As we're approaching Christmas, dare I say, there was a little article, tiny little article with the headline, "Has Turkey Had Its Day? The centrepiece of British Christmas dinners is losing its crown as less than half of UK households are likely to eat turkey on December the 25th. Just 51% of people celebrating the holiday ate the traditional staple last year, down from 60% in 2020. So how important is turkey in your Christmas dinner?
I am delighted to hear this, actually, that I'll tell you, because my father did a lot of hunting and fishing. He was also a great cook. But anyway, so he brought home this turkey. He hadn't shot it, actually. I don't know where he got it. And it was in the basement, and I made friends with him.
Oh!
Yes!
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, also they recognise faces, and they know people who are kind to them. And then that was dinner the next day.
Oh, that's hard.
So I don't eat any meat, and I'm really bad news at Christmas.
Fair enough. Well, it says a lot of vegetarian options have become more popular. I've had quite a few vegan Christmases because my mum was vegan, and my husband makes an amazing nut roast. And sometimes when I go out for roast dinner, sometimes I'll opt for the vegetarian version. And I'm not a vegetarian, but I love a nut roast.
Yeah.
That sounds good, actually.
Definitely. Really good.
Yeah, I was a bit turned off Christmas dinner because of the whole idea that it usually
revolves around the
meat or poultry or all these things I don't eat.
My family are quite traditional with Christmas dinners. Yeah. So I think we'll always have the turkey there, and then we can have other bits on top as well.
Yeah.
I'm not in love with the taste of a turkey. I think there's just quite a big build-up. And why are we just restricting ourselves to having it on one day?
Tradition!
But obviously it's not that great if we're not eating it on other days.
For the rest of the year, exactly. Why don't we learn from that?
So I'm a bit confused with that. We did have, I think, nut roast 1 or 2 years because my sister was a vegan for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just for a couple of years.
Just for a couple of
she
years.
She tried it out.
And then I thought she's found some sense. Sorry to any vegans out there.
I do think it's quite extreme. Vegan is
your
a bit
turkey,
too extreme.
You're traditional as well, yeah, Jan.
It is.
You're having a turkey?
Yeah. Well, we're going out this year, so I'm hoping I'm going to get turkey.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you having turkey?
I think so, yes. Oh, yes, we're just having a couple of people over and, we normally have turkey.
I've never had a Spanish Christmas, so I'm dabbling with that idea, but I'd have to get my direct family out here, and I'm not sure if they want to do
it's
that.
It's different, isn't it? Fish, normally, yes, fish. Mm. But we had one Christmas where we just went to one of our favourite chiringuitos on the beach in Marbella and had calamari and prawns and, normal food that we... That was quite nice.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And the weather's quite nice end of December here, isn't it?
It's usually wonderful.
It can be lovely.
Yeah, lovely.
We always like to go down to the beach on Christmas Day, just for a tipple on the beach, before Christmas dinner. Because after that, you can't really move, can you? Okay. How about Christmas decorations? There was an article, I won't kind of read from it, but it was a military camp in the US where people started putting up their Christmas decorations and they were all told to take them down because it's far too early. When do you like to do Christmas? When do you put them up and when do you bring them down? Do you have kind of set times each year?
Yeah, beginning of December, I think.
Beginning of December. Mm. And when would you take them down, generally?
Is it about the 6th or the 7th, is it?
Yeah, 6th or the 7th of January. Because there's three kings here, isn't there?
So that's right, in the middle
of... middle of January,
I think because I live on my own, I don't really engage with putting up Christmas decorations.
Do you not? No. Oh, I think I'd do it more if I lived on my own.
I think one singular year I put a small Christmas tree up in my classroom when I was working in a school.
Yeah.
But only one year out of six. So I don't know. I think it's mainly because I can't be bothered to think about the organisation of it. I don't know if I'm that Christmassy, but my sister was arguing with me the other day saying that I am Christmassy and I can't say I'm not Christmassy because if I didn't have a British Christmas, I'd miss it.
Yes.
Because I've been dabbling in the idea of not being in Britain for this Christmas.
Okay.
But I've only spent one Christmas away from Britain and it was in Thailand and that wasn't great, to be honest.
It is different. I did a Christmas in Australia and I was backpacking and it's warm there. You know, obviously the seasons are completely different. So I was on Bondi Beach in a bikini with a Santa hat, eating like sausages and it was very weird.
Yes, but a nice change.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's nice to do something different. I love Christmas decorations. And I enjoy the process of putting them up. You know, yeah. I put Christmas music on, have a glass of Baileys or something, and put all the decorations up. I enjoy the whole thing. You don't.
Mine is kind of a last minute job. You know, I'm much more into, because I'm Scottish, you know, they celebrate more New Year than Christmas.
Yeah.
And so I sort of stumble across Christmas and then I throw up a few, you know, long tinsely stuff around the living room and the front door to make it look like I'm, you know, taking care a little bit. And that's it.
Nice. Fair enough.
Yeah. A tiny little, you know, 3-inch Christmas tree.
Yes.
Yeah.
I battle with myself every year whether to get a new colour scheme or not. And I certainly don't do it every year, but every few years I think we've had the same colour, you know, whether you have red and green or white and gold or white and silver.
You're on the completely different end of the spectrum of Christmas decorations to me. With my bent Christmas tree in the cupboard, which probably won't see the light of day. But then I'll go back to my parents and my sister and then I'll see that in their house.
Yes.
So that'll be nice.
Something you have to be careful with if you have animals doing a Christmas tree. I could never have a Christmas tree that sits on the ground because the cat would get the baubles and it would just be a nightmare and pull the whole thing over. So I have to have a decent sized Christmas tree that fits on a little table so she can't get
to it. She doesn't go on that little table?
No.
George goes anywhere.
Really?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, no, there's not much room because there's presents underneath the tree, so you couldn't really get up there.
You're lucky.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You see all kinds of disasters, especially if they're glass baubles. I mean, mine are plastic, but if they're glass, you have to be so careful with pets.
Oh no, George would be jumping on it. He'd wait till I wasn't there. No, he would take it on as the latest challenge. Absolutely.
Love it. Yeah. Better take a break.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Women Talk. With me in the studio today is Roslyn Scott-Gibb, Katie Rowlands and Jan Humpage. Cigarette butts should be banned to stop the huge volume of discarded tips damaging the environment. Plastic cigarette filters are the world's most littered item, leaking toxic chemicals into the environment and breaking down into microplastics. An estimated 4.5 trillion cigarette butts are littered each year worldwide.
That's terrible.
Isn't it shocking?
And the thing is on the beach and then it goes into the water.
And it
takes something like 100 years for it to sort of dissolve.
It's funny, isn't it? Because throughout our lives, it's been just accepted as a normal, okay thing to do. Somebody's smoking, they finish, you know, in the film Grease, Sandy drops her cigarette and stubs it out sexily with her foot. It's a normal, accepted thing that you can just chuck your cigarette butts on the floor and stub them out with your foot.
Does it improve the cigarette putting a tip? Because when I was little, they didn't have a tip.
No, I mean, it's supposed to be a filter, so you're not taking in as much nicotine and tar and things.
healthy.
But this guy here from the World Health Organization said it doesn't really make a difference and they should get rid of it altogether.
Yeah.
Mm. But smoking's changed so much just in my lifetime of how unpopular it's become in the UK. Mm. But I don't think Spain's quite caught up.
No.
When I was young, my dance teacher used to smoke in front of us in an enclosed room. You'd never dream of doing that in the UK now.
No.
But cigarette butts are really annoying me, actually, on
just flick them out of the car window.
It's awful.
I wrote a note the other day to my neighbours because we all have designated parking spots. Mm. And the house which is adjacent to my parking spot, there's a group of builders, and I think they're just escaping from their wives because they go there every weekday evening and they just have a big party. And they're wearing their workman clothes, but they don't seem to be doing anything. And it's really bizarre. And then they come out, they lean on my car, which is fine, as long as you're not damaging it.
Yeah.
And then they throw cigarette butts into my parking spot. Mm. So I think that's really inappropriate.
Definitely.
I hate smoking. And who's going to pick that up? So I wrote a note. I said, please stop throwing the cigarette butts
on
the floor. And today I picked up a few of them. My hands then smelled. And I just threw it back onto the doorway of the house.
Yeah,
I thought,
good for you.
I thought you shouldn't be putting it in my designated car parking spot.
Mm, yeah.
That's rude.
Yeah. Definitely.
Maybe that was a bit dramatic doing it back to them.
Well, maybe. I don't blame you.
I think
it doesn't do any harm to draw attention to it. But also, more forest fires are started through people.
Yeah.
So it's also a part of that. Not some of it's intentional and some of it's just thoughtlessness and throwing your cigarette butts.
Yeah.
So it's really dangerous and completely thoughtless. And now that's quite new, that many of the beaches prohibit smoking on the beach.
Yes, good
which
idea.
Is really good.
Yeah.
I mean, we used to go around collecting cigarette butts from the beaches.
Yeah.
You know, again, to save it from going back into the water and stuff.
I bet there's a lot of people, a lot of smokers, who wouldn't think to litter anything else. You know, they wouldn't finish their plastic bottle of water and just chuck the bottle of water on the floor.
Isn't it? Yeah.
They'd find a bin. But with their cigarettes, is that because it's so small, I think a lot of smokers, because it's been so accepted and normalised throughout the end of time.
I have to sweep outside the office nearly every day.
Yeah, I think people just chuck it and don't think about it, because most people don't finish a cigarette and go, oh, where shall I put this now? What shall I do with it? Because it takes a huge bit of effort to dispose of it in the proper way.
Another thing they do is they stub them into the planters.
Oh,
yes, I mean, that means somebody has got to take it out.
Definitely, and it's going to affect the plants.
Yeah.
I also think vaping's really inappropriate because I feel like people who vape often blow the smoke in your face.
Yeah.
Because they think it's a fruity smell.
Yes.
Proper cigarette smokers don't generally do that these days. But I think vapers, they'll do it right next to you. And I think, I don't want to be smelling,
that's
blackberry.
Your chemical
vapor.
Blackberry
yeah,
weirdness.
Yeah, but vapers, sometimes I've found I've been in an enclosed room with no windows open and somebody thinks it's healthy enough to vape. I mean, it's ridiculous. Mm. So these days, it's not as bad as cigarette smoke, but it's still not healthy.
Yeah, well, I don't think enough time has passed for us to know the proper effects of vaping. I mean, there have been kids and people who have been in hospital because of vaping so much. That has happened. Oh. It hasn't happened as much as cigarette smoking, but it hasn't been around as long as cigarettes. Mm. But I think all the chemical, I mean, you can't compare it in terms of the tar and the nicotine, but all the chemicals and things, I mean, it can't be good for your insides.
And it's only recently that they're now limiting the age. You know, kids were, you know, they were gearing
marketed it towards children,
not even teenagers, just young kids.
Pretty colours, bubblegum flavour.
Exactly.
I mean, what self-respecting adult would walk around with smoking a bubblegum
vape? Flavoured vape.
And there's a big epidemic in schools at the moment with it as well. I think some children take it to school with them and then they go to the toilet to have a quick vape. And that sounds so unnecessary.
Yeah.
Well, it's so unhealthy
And that's getting them into being, you know, hooked on something, and that's not a good pattern to be in, is it, from a young age? Okay, this I thought was interesting, talking about pronunciation of names, particularly Irish names. And I could relate to this because I've got some lovely Irish friends who have got some names that are spelt very differently to how they're pronounced. But I was quite offended by the article on the way that it says it. It says, when it comes to perfect pronunciation, there's always a word or two that trip us up. But if you've got Irish friends called Niamh or Saoirse, you're best off just calling them mate. which I thought was really quite offensive. For analysts of UK internet searches beginning with how to pronounce, found the two names top the list of words most likely to confound us. I mean, I look up how things are pronounced all the time. I think it's really important, particularly names. Yeah. I think it's easy for us to think, oh, well, we never had that problem. But if people always called you Kitte or something, you'd be like, no, it's Katie.
Yes.
I mean, I would. If people said, oh, hi, Henny, I'd be like, no, it's Hannah.
Yeah.
I think I would correct someone straight away.
Mm-hmm.
But yet people that have names like Neve and Saoirse that are spelt completely differently to how they're pronounced,
They're
probably got people all the time. How do I say your Nima? Nima, how do I say? And being quite rude about their names. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that's okay.
I think if you live in the UK or Ireland, you should make an effort to learn the names. However, living in Spain, and I used to work in a school with 50 nationalities, there would be some names you think, I've never seen those collection of letters ever together in my life.
Yeah.
And therefore, how do I remember how to say it? I think if it's in your own first language, it's much easier to remember what it sounds like. And sometimes I would actually avoid saying some children's name because I thought, I'm just going to butcher this completely.
Yeah.
But I should have probably made a bit of a better effort. But there's certain cultures, you know, there's going to be lots of Ekaterinas who are Russian, for example. So there's certain, in an international school environment, you can sort of work out the names if you think about it carefully and practice it properly. But actually, another funny thing is I find myself pronunciating my name differently to Spanish people, because when I say Katie, Spanish people can't wrap their heads around that sometimes. So I actually say, mi nombre es Katie.
Okay.
So that then makes it easier for them to remember, because that's how they're going to write
Lovely.
It. So I don't know if anyone else changes their name to...
Well, the only thing I say is you can call me anything in the whole world except Rosa or Rose.
Rose or Rosa. Oh, fair enough. Yeah, I just think it's nice to make an effort, as opposed to say, I heard someone say once, fairly recently, actually, to somebody else, oh, you're the one with the funny name.
Which that's I thought very rude.
Really offensive. Really offensive.
But I would do it phonetically. If it's a name I'm going to have to know, I'm going to see another time, I would sort of write it out phonetically so I could remember it that way.
Yes, exactly.
Instead of spelling it the way they would, try and get it right.
We had to learn how to say Maeve and Aoife, didn't we?
Yes, exactly. Aoife and Maeve. So Aoife is spelled A-O-I-F-E, so you'd think it would be more Aoife, but it's Aoife. And Maeve, obviously we know the name Maeve, but how it's spelled in Irish, or this particular spelling, is M-E-A-D... H-B-H.
Wow.
Which is amazing. So, you know, you would look at it and you wouldn't know at all how it's pronounced. Yeah. So we've been told how it's pronounced and now we know. But really interesting. I think, I mean, it's an education, isn't it?
Yes.
Learning all these things. I think it's nice. We do one more and then we'll take another break. If you think celebs are your friends, dream on. If you've ever had dreams of standing over a free kick with David Beckham, baking a Victoria sponge with Mary Berry, or joining Prince William at a state dinner, then you are not alone. One in five of us regularly dream we are best friends with a celebrity.
I think they should get a life.
It never happened? No, you don't recall? I mean, you don't control your dreams, so one doesn't need to be embarrassed about dreaming about a celebrity.
No, I can never remember.
Oh, I know I have.
I don't think I've dreams at all.
No? You don't ever remember your dreams?
No, not really.
Oh.
Mine are mostly people I know, and then sometimes imaginary people, but never celebs.
Mine are normally people I know, but I have dreamt about celebrities.
Anybody you'd like to share?
Well, I think I told this recently on the show, actually. It was years ago, and I dreamt of some people in Neighbours. And it was when I was a child and used to watch Neighbours. But I've never forgotten it, because I remember it being really, really vivid. And I woke up thinking I was, you know, hanging out with Guy Pearce and Jason Donovan from Neighbours. It was really cool.
My nana used to have very vivid dreams, because she used to dream of a particular house, and every night she would visit a different room in the house.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't know any more details than that, but it's quite a strange thing, isn't it?
Well, some people would analyse that. I mean, we're always better to analyse our own dreams, but that the brain can each section of the house is a different part of the brain.
Wow.
That's one way of analyzing. Ah. So maybe it's got something to do with her brain.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's fascinating, dreams and where they come from. I mean, I'm definitely influenced by dreams if we're watching something late at night, you know, watching a police drama where people are murdered and things like that. I then might dream about something quite dramatic and, dare I say, have a nightmare. I mean, it's not, you don't think of doing that as an adult so much. But it's not like I wake up in a cold sweat crying or anything. But, you know, sometimes have a bad dream where bad things happen to people you love, which isn't very nice.
Yeah.
And nightmares can be very vivid, can't they?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You can wake up and you can think, oh, was that, did that actually happen?
Yeah, it's horrible.
And it takes quite a few hours for it to go away for me sometimes.
Definitely. And I don't want to go back to sleep, so I don't want to go into that same dream. So I'm like waking myself up, so then I'm...
And it might be a dream or a nightmare of your real life, but it's just skewed and people look slightly different and the room looks slightly different. Bizarre, aren't they?
Really bizarre. Oh, I'll take a break now.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Women Talk. With me in the studio is Rosalind Scott-Gibb, Katie Rowlands and Jan Humpage. There's an article here from a couple of weeks ago, which I was sort of offended by. But then in this week's paper, they've got the opposite. So we've got 11 things we men secretly hate that women love to wear. And I didn't like it. I thought, well, that's a bit mean. But then there was one, 11 looks men love, but women secretly hate. So I thought, OK, well, we can do a bit of both then. So the things that men don't like, apparently, that women might wear include furball pom-pom bobble hats, which I think are cute.
Really?
I don't have one because they don't suit me. I'm not, hats don't suit
me.
Where
are the bobbles? The ones
at the top? Yes.
Oh, no, really?
Oh, you don't know?
Oh, God, no.
Okay, so you're with the men on this. Very, very tight gym leggings.
Men don't like them?
I think, no, apparently not. But, I mean, I asked the men on Men Talk last week and they sort of disagreed.
I think it depends how they're worn. If, you know, they can be worn tastefully or incredibly untastefully.
Yes, I know what you mean.
How have they come up with these stats?
I don't know.
Have some
bored people in an office going, yeah, we've got nothing to write about. What should we do?
Maybe they've interviewed three people and two agreed.
Maybe. Also, the knee-length quilted coats, you know, the big, like, puffer coats
I don't think they're bad.
If it's very cold, I think it's a good idea.
Exactly. Practical. Sometimes things are just practical. Loungewear as outdoor wear. I think we're seeing a lot more of this. People wearing things that could be used for pajamas.
Really?
But wearing them outside. Yeah.
Don't like that.
I can't imagine you doing that, Rosalind.
No,
so I don't think you'd need to worry.
I didn't think people do that here.
Yeah. You see a lot of it in Marbella. Gym wear or loungewear out and about.
Oh, gym wear. Yeah, okay.
Gym wear, but loungewear. So the one, the opposite, looks that men love but women secretly hate, include some things that I agree with and some things that I don't. Ugg boots. I quite agree that...
Yeah.
More a man in Ugg boots.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's a bit... No, I'm not sure.
I've never understood Ugg boots. They always look really uncomfortable. I think they were very popular when I was in school and they just always looked like their feet were collapsing.
Yeah.
But we don't really need to wear that in this kind of era of the world,
no,
do we?
No,
absolutely not. Another one, skinny joggers.
No.
What are skinny joggers?
Well, like jogging bottoms, but that are quite skinny to the leg. I quite like them on a man.
No.
Depending on the leg, I suppose.
It depends on the leg.
Yes, quite.
Yeah.
I don't think Rog wears those.
No, fair enough. Nothing wrong with his legs, mind. But another one, no socks with shoes. I definitely agree with that.
Really? I don't think they look odd. Really?
I don't think I've got any strong opinions about any of these things. Just let people wear what they want to wear.
Yeah, I'm a bit agreeing.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Kind of casual. I don't mind that.
I mean, the jumpers around the shoulders, that's another one.
I think you
need to be Italian to carry that off.
But it's smarter around the shoulder than it is around the waist.
Oh, God, definitely. Yes, definitely.
So if you need to take your jumper somewhere, it's got to go somewhere.
I just remember when we were in Italy on holiday, we were remarking how unbelievably stylish both the the women, but particularly the men were. And we were analysing what they were wearing and thinking, you know, things like jumpers around the shoulders and really simple things. It wasn't like they were going all out. And we were picturing both ourselves and people that we knew and thinking, see, if they were wearing these types of things or we were wearing, it wouldn't look as stylish. We really felt that you had to be Italian in order to pull some of these looks off.
Well, the men, Italian and French men are much more aware of their looks, aren't they, than, say, English men.
Yeah, in general.
In general.
We'll add, if we add that, then we're all right, Rosalind.
Yeah, okay.
Red trousers.
No.
What, no, you don't like, or no, you...
No,
what's his name, the one that's got a Spanish surname that does the train thing? Oh, I can't think of his
train
name.
What do you mean?
He does a programme about trains going through the country.
Oh, yes, Michael Portillo.
Yes, he wears... Pink trousers.
He wears, coloured trousers.
I think if you've got the confidence to wear red trousers, why not?
Oh, yeah. God, no, I don't think so. There's got to be a limit.
People can wear what they like, apart from.
Apart from.
Oh, dear.
I think I just wear too many colours under the rainbow, so I couldn't care less if another person wants to do the same.
Yeah.
No, I'd send them home if you can.
If you feel nice, then you wear it.
Yeah.
Unless you turn up at Rosalind's.
Yeah, exactly.
This new article, "What's Mine is Yours," has long been uttered by love-struck young couples about to embark on married life together. But growing numbers are ditching the tradition, with up to a fifth of young adults now signing a prenup before tying the knot. One in five men and 16% of women aged 18 to 35 say they have signed a prenup.
I'm surprised it's not more in this day and age. That's only 20%. I mean, it's not very much, is it?
Okay.
No, I think it's not a bad idea.
Okay.
So what does a prenup mean, really?
So if you're going to marry someone, there is a contract drawn up that basically, I mean, it will be decided depending on the couple and the lawyers, but it will basically say if this marriage comes to an end or if you cheat on me or do whatever, you will...
You get that and I
get
that.
Nothing. Or if we divorce amicably, you get that and I get that. It's all kind of put in place, the legalities.
Yeah. And does it make a difference to a normal divorce?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But it's all laid out there beforehand, and it's normally done because one of the two is a lot wealthier than the other one.
Yes, I can understand that.
So that's generally why.
But it also means that both understand they're getting married for hopefully the right reasons, and not because she's got five houses or he's got, a huge business of some kind.
Yeah, I understand it. I think it makes perfect sense. But I still feel like I'd feel weird if it came up in my life.
It's quite transactional, but
yes,
I think...
exactly. It's not very romantic, is it, by the way?
I think it's probably quite a good idea if you want to be in control of your money and look after yourself from both sides.
Yeah.
But then it is quite transactional, so it's...
It takes the romance out of getting married for love, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Which should be the point.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing, that the attitude should change about the romance and all of that, that there are certain practical things about marriage. There should be, anyway. It shouldn't be just... romance, should it? And so I think it's about time, but it's still only 20% or women 16%. It's nothing.
No.
Have you heard of a lavender marriage?
No.
That's when you marry, I think, your gay best friend, and you just do it for the financial reasons and the company. So you're not necessarily going to be in a romantic relationship.
But you live together.
Yes. There's a few setups like that online.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why is it called lavender?
I'm not sure.
It smells nice.
It smells nice.
It doesn't smell good to me. Smells fishy.
How weird.
A lavender marriage is a marriage which is not for romantic or sexual purposes.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm.
Okay. I don't quite get the point of doing that when you're younger, because maybe both people would like to think that they're going to meet someone and be in an actual marriage.
Yes.
But maybe if you're a bit older and you've been like friends for many, many years and you really want to look after each other financially, I think that's lovely.
It's quite a nice
idea. I think it would be a strange thing to do in your 20s.
Yes.
But... yeah.
I suppose it's a bit like people saying to you, if we're not married by the time we're 30, we should get together. I think I had someone say that to me once.
I did.
When I was about 19, but he's now married with a child, so that's fine.
Well, I had a friend, a gay friend, when I was in Kenya, and he was with Lufthansa, and they were tightening up on things. So he said, you know, would you be interested in getting married? Just, you know, for the, but you would then have free travel.
Yeah. You see? Oh, you see? Perks. Yeah.
You know, I said, no, I couldn't do that.
No.
No, I couldn't do that. It just didn't feel right. Right. Could trust him. He wasn't going to take advantage in any way, but just didn't feel good about it.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah, I, as I say, the prenup, I think, makes perfect sense. But at the same time, I cannot imagine, you know, when I think about the build up to my wedding and how excited we were and the planning of it, and it was all, you know, romantic and lovely and fun. I can't imagine at that point going and sitting in a lawyer's office and going through a contract going, OK, so if you cheat on me, this is what will happen. If I cheat on you, this is what will happen. If you leave after 3 months, if it's after a year, you know, because it is going through all. For going through all the possibilities, and I'd feel that would really upset me and make me feel more different about the whole situation.
Mm. I mean, when you've been married 55 years like we have,
amazing.
Wow. Yeah,
it's hard to think about, isn't it, the idea of going through all of that.
Well, we're just a couple, aren't we?
Exactly. Yeah. As it should be.
But in a way it can keep the romance, because if one partner, say, is very wealthy, it would reassure you them that the other person was marrying you for the right reasons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I get
it. So there is that side of it.
I get it. I just can't imagine doing it myself. We better take another ad break.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the last part of today's Women Talk with Roslyn Scott-Gibb, Katie Rowlands and Jan Humpage. Women may be seen as being thriftier than men, but as the budget looms and family finances come under strain, it appears they face a greater struggle to save than men. 6 in 10 people are finding it harder to save than a year ago. Women were more likely than men to report greater problems. How are we at saving?
It's not, I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is women are still paid considerably less than men and or have less money. There just happened to be something the other day about like an investment company and how they offered much better deals to men than to women, for example.
Yeah.
And so we forget that. And, you know, people are so quick to say, oh, you know, women have not only equal now, but more than that. But it's not true.
No.
The reality is not true at all. So that could be a serious part of that.
Yeah, we have less to save.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyone else?
Well.
Just me and you, Roslyn.
Well, I like saving money.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you always been like that?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So you're quite good at putting things away.
I have like a payment every month into the ISA. And
yeah. Oh, good.
I'm quite good at saving money. One of my ex-colleagues introduced me to an idea of pots. So you can have physical or digital pots where you put an exact amount in each pot and then you can spend. So you can have one for food, one for petrol, one for entertainment.
That doesn't sound fun at all.
That's a lot.
I'm a mathematical person, so it's quite fun for me.
Oh my goodness. You literally have a pot for petrol.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Dear.
But then if you, I don't know the exact rules, but you've got to sort of go with the flow a little bit. You can't be stringent with it. I asked my ex-colleagues and she said she actually spends the exact amounts normally each month. And if she hasn't spent
that's
it
amazing.
All, she'll spend the rest of it to treat herself or she'll move it to a saving pot.
Yeah.
I'm not quite obsessive like that.
That's incredible.
I share my money between the pots. So, for example, more recently, I've been taking money out of the petrol pot and putting it into the food pot. But it does sound a bit sad, but I do like numbers, so it's quite quick for me to
do. Yeah, no, whatever works.
I would have thought somebody as young as you wouldn't use cash anymore.
You have digital pots and physical pots.
Yeah.
So if you've got the digital pots like I have, what you need to do is you need to remove a little bit of the money from the pots, spend it, and then the amount decreases.
Wow, clever. I mean, petrol's one of those things that I don't sort of think about. If the petrol's running low, I go fill her up.
You don't go to that press.
Oh yes, no, I do try and
do
go
you?
To the cheaper
I
ones
go there.
When I can. Yeah,
I mean, I'll go miles out of my way to go to the cheaper.
But
ones.
I'm quite maverick. I like leaving it till the last minute.
I do the same.
But it drives my husband nuts. Yeah. But he's like, there's 20 kilometres left. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, plenty of time. I've only got to go to work and back. And he's like, oh, no.
At least three times I've arrived at the petrol station on zero, which is
really very irresponsible. I've done that once. Oh, wow, three times. This is why you have the pot.
Yeah, that's why you need a pot.
But I think things like petrol, obviously, you're going to spend what you were going to spend with petrol, so you can't be that obsessive with it. But my petrol costs do tend to be the same month to month anyway. But I heard someone online on an online video saying that she does the same with pots with petrol, and when she spends her petrol pot for the week, she gets on the bus.
Oh! Rosalind looks like you just swore at her.
Do you have a fun pot?
Yes, I have a fun pot.
What do you do with your fun pot?
Well, it can be a whole host of things. For example, ITS 50th celebration.
Yes, absolutely.
Did you buy a new outfit for
it? I did, yes.
Okay, good.
I spent about 60 or 70 euros in a matching set, and the ticket was 60 euros.
Wow, really?
So that was quite an expensive night, really.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
So that's about 130 euros out of that pot.
Your fun pot is quite large. Much larger than my fun pot would be.
Oh, I love it. Right. Moving on to, sleep divorce. For many couples, it's the only way of getting a good night's sleep, but research shows sleeping in separate beds, so-called sleep divorce, I don't know why they have to call it that, can be bad for your mental well-being. The study looked at 860 couples in their 60s and found those who opted to sleep apart were generally unhappier and less satisfied with life. Sleep divorce has become increasingly popular among long-term partners kept awake by their other half snoring, tossing and turning, or getting up in the night to go to the loo. A recent consumer survey revealed that 1 in 6 UK couples spend the night in a different bed or a different room to their partner.
One in six. Still together.
Oh, very nice, very nice. I mean, I kind of get it. If you are kept awake by your partner for any of those reasons.
Yes, and Roger sometimes got a bad back and he will go to the other bedroom.
Yeah, and if either of us aren't feeling well, we'll always go to a different room so to not infect the other one.
And
so
if one is a light sleeper... You know, a light sleeper, then perhaps... I don't think it's necessarily a bad...
I went through a bad stage of hot flushes and I had to sleep separately because I was wetting the bed.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. That's a good reason.
There's lots of different reasons for it.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it needs to be a bad thing at all. I mean, people always go, oh, but then what about the intimacy and you're not, you know, spending... But, I mean, yeah... all of these are very valid reasons, and sleep is really, really important. Yeah, and if you're consistently with someone long term and weeks and months and years and you're not sleeping well, that is not okay.
Yeah.
So
that's
either
not
you,
going to lead
either
to
you
happy
leave
marriage.
The person or you or you sleep in a different bed.
Yeah. Yeah.
It makes sense, I think. We have 5 and a bit minutes left. The Queen praised efforts, so this, well, I read this last week and we all thought, the Queen, she's not here anymore, but it does mean the Queen married to the King. It just seemed like a strange thing to say.
Yeah.
The Queen yesterday praised efforts to get youngsters off their phones and ensure they enjoy reading all their lives. Mm-hmm. Camilla insisted it was more important than ever to encourage children to read books at an early age, just as she had. Hear, hear. Do you remember reading lots as a child? Has that continued into adulthood?
I think reading is so important. I always read a lot because then I'd read my father's books. But now, my brother didn't. Admittedly, he was an engineer, but anyway, he didn't. So he was never into reading, and I was always into it, and I still am. And I fear for children today if they don't learn to love books.
Mm.
Because don't you think it's one of the main ways of developing the imagination?
Yeah.
And where are we without imagination? It's so important in life. So it's a huge gap.
And vocabulary and knowledge and so much you can get from books.
So much. And it's really up to the family in a way. I mean, if teachers can help. I mean, in Sweden, apparently now, they're bringing books back. They're taking away the laptops and phones and bringing books back.
Yeah, another thing I find is that you're all sitting around in restaurants and the children are just looking at their phone and not communicating.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
and not learning how to communicate. That's the other thing. Yeah. Or carry on a conversation or be polite. What about manners? That worries me too.
Katie, as a teacher, you must have seen this or not seen this.
Well, I'm a maths teacher, so I'm not necessarily thinking in that realm, but I used to love reading when I was younger. But I think sometimes I used to get into the competitive spirit of finishing books. And my dad once said to me, I don't think you actually are absorbing that book. You just want to get it ticked off at the library because there was this competition where you could see if you could get six books ticked off at the library.
Love that.
Which was a bit
How
sad.
How competitive of you.
How numerical of me.
Yes.
These days, though, I read probably about 10 books a year, which is not an awful lot, but I've got this...
Novels? What kind of books?
Yes, mostly novels. The last book I read was very strange. It was about... a woman, an older lady, who had a platonic relationship with an octopus.
Well, you can laugh. Right. No, I'm sorry. No.
Well, I've seen my octopus teacher.
Exactly. And the more I learn about octopuses, the more I'd rather spend more time with them than a lot of human beings I know.
Yes, fair enough.
And I'm finding... reading more and more, I now put all my books into AI and I say, based on all these books I like and all the ratings I've given it and the theme I'm feeling in my life, what is the next book I should read? Ooh. And this academic, this year, has I've read so many good books because of that.
That's amazing.
For example,
the octopus book, it was very heartwarming.
Yeah,
I'm currently reading a book about a woman, it's called The Centre. The woman goes to this retreat place where she has to sit and listen to German all day and she doesn't understand German. And then by day 8 or something, she can speak German fluently. Wow. But you're not allowed to tell anyone about this place called The Centre. It's very secretive. Ooh. And you can only refer one person. So I keep asking for books based on what I've read before. And I might say, oh, with a little bit of a dystopian theme. But as a teacher, I do think it's important. I do think it's difficult in certain families in the locality, though, because the parents aren't necessarily English first language. So they can't necessarily read English fluently themselves. And lots of children I work with can speak 3 languages. So it's which language are we going to focus on? And you often find they have a weakness in all 3 languages. And at some point they become very clever children because they can speak all 3 of them. But at the beginning of their life, it's quite difficult to grasp which one is the most important
language.
What
age are you teaching?
I'm teaching at the moment between 4 and 19.
Oh, wow. Right.
Yes.
Right. Quite a big span.
Yeah,
yes. I mean, the thing with reading, both for children and adults, is finding something that you're interested in. I mean, that's the way to get into reading. If you've got boys that like cars or girls that like unicorns, or it's being very sexist there, but Winnie the Pooh, you know, it doesn't matter what your interests are, you can find something about that. Mm-hmm. So that's a great way to engage children to get used to reading.
Read by author, because then you're guaranteed to like the book.
Yes, I'm obsessed with Freda McFadden at the moment. She wrote The Housemaid.
Oh, yes.
And there's been like 3 in that series, all in the bestseller charts.
But the
and
Housemaid,
she's written like loads more, and I'm apparently just going through them.
The Housemaid is a copycat of another book, so just look into
that. Yeah. I think it was a woman who I interviewed who wrote The Maid.
Yes, I read a very similar vibe one to The Housemaid.
But I prefer The Housemaid.
Really?
I love her books. And I think I'm on like the 6th book that she's written. I'm just literally devouring them.
Is it
really,
about
really
a woman
like
trying to infiltrate a rich couple? Is it that book?
They're kind of, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not really. She's trying to infiltrate. It's not. No. It's not that. Okay. But she is living with a rich couple as The Housemaid.
I've read the other the book, which is similar to that, but not that one.
Oh, so many books, so little time. Thank you all very much, ladies, for coming in today. Thank you, Rosalind. Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Jan.
Thank you, Hannah. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everyone listening. Thank you for all the millions of comments we had today that we couldn't quite get through. Howard Brereton is next with Spain Today. I will be back on Monday at 4.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels, and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings, you look for deals, you wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt? The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.